Hello builders, welcome to the Builders Club Startup Founders podcast, a podcast for founders to upskill themselves and understand the founder mindset. Every week, we sit with the best minds in the startup ecosystem and understand what it takes to start, run and scale businesses. This podcast is from one of our recordings of our Water Cooler Conversations, a weekly community AMA where we get established entrepreneurs to discuss their strategies and their mindset in front of our community members. So sit back, relax, and let's start with the episode. So first of all, welcome everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Startup Founders Podcast by the Builders Club. We have been doing this long-running podcast for the benefit of all the first-time entrepreneurs and people who are just starting up, just to understand, for them to understand the challenges that that an entrepreneur usually faces, and also to understand the perspectives of investors who basically provide them with the fuel that is usually needed for startups to take their trajectory into the growth phase. Tonight we have someone very, very special. Tonight we have Namit Chok with us. Namit represents the W Health Ventures investment firm, which is a Boston-based venture capital firm focused on helping entrepreneurs who are building in the healthcare ecosystem. It was founded by serial tech entrepreneurs Sunil Wadhwani and his family, and W Health Ventures invests in tech-enabled early-stage healthcare companies that are disrupting the healthcare delivery in the US and the India ecosystem. So, the philosophy of W Health Ventures basically is that the healthcare ecosystem is broken across the world, and there are a lot of large unmet patient needs which need to be resolved. And W Health Ventures aims to solve critical challenges faced by people due to the lack of access, lack of awareness, and poor quality healthcare. Coming to the guest in the hot seat, Namit. Namit is an investment professional. He is an ex-management consultant who's focused in the healthcare sector in India. Prior to joining W Health Ventures, he has worked as an associate in Loak Capital, where he made investments across sectors and worked closely with entrepreneurs in the journey to scale up ventures as well. Namit is an ISB alumni, and he also has completed the level 1 and level 2 of CFS. So hardcore investment background, hardcore understanding of money. Welcome Namit. Welcome to the Builders Club.
Thanks Sohail. Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So Namit, I think very rarely, I mean, I think this whole finance background is fairly common in the investment domain, but I would still want to know a little bit more about your initial journey, how did you start your overall profession? How did you stumble upon the investment, the investment domain in general? And how has your initial days of being a part of different VC firms been? And then we can probably delve into the journey or into the understanding of the W Health Ventures in general.
No, absolutely. I think not many people know that I, in fact, started my career as a techie some 12, 13 years back at Infosys. Wow. I was coding at Infy, which obviously the organization does not need any introduction. And very quickly, I realized coding is not something that I was enjoying, and I have only one principle in life. Your work should be fun. And very quickly, I moved out and moved on the consulting side of things without knowing anything about finance. So I learned almost everything on the job. I started working as an analyst and then obviously became consultant in the entire consulting grind for 6 years between firms like PwC and Alvarez & Marsal. So that's how I began and moved into finance, started pursuing my CFA program. Healthcare to me, in fact, happened by chance when I moved to consulting from Infy. And since then, it's become almost a passion for me. And I have been in the sector for the last 10, 11 years now, either as a consultant in the first half or now as an investor in the last 6, 7 years. So did that for, you know, did consulting for 6, 7 years, standard commercial due diligence sort of projects, strategy projects in the healthcare space, working with hospital groups for their M&As, working on digital strategy projects across hospitals, diagnostic chains, single specialty, and so on and so forth. I think 6 years into the grind, I almost realized that, you know, I want to be closer to the founder ecosystem because I had seen the other side from a distance while working as a consultant. I had understood healthcare challenges on ground, traveled to different parts of the country where access to healthcare was terrible. You know, the stories quite sad and, you know, pretty bad healthcare shape in the country. So, you know, wanted to move to the different side where I could work closely with founders, actually make the change and then, you know, be the catalyst rather than, you know, giving gyan to some of these founders from a distance. So that was the journey, moved to investing side of things. Between consulting and investing, went to my B school to network as most of the people in the country today. And then at my earlier fund, I was again doing healthcare and insurance as my focus areas. And more recently at W, it's been 2 years now that I look at early stage digital health investments. So that's been a journey from being a techie at some point of time to being a finance geek now. So yeah.
Interesting. So, Namit, just wanted to understand. So I think your initial journey has been in the tech ecosystem. So that basically gives you the frameworks, the logical frameworks through which you can look at stuff. The investment and the finance nerdiness in you basically taught you the understanding of money and how to marry these frameworks with money. And now you are in a space where you're looking at the health tech or the healthcare domain, right? So before we get into the W Health Ventures angle, I just wanted to understand from you. Usually people don't marry healthcare with money. I mean, from a layman's perspective, you know, it's usually healthcare. And while you know, since I myself have a healthcare background, so I understand that a majority of the businesses in general, I mean, not majority, all the businesses have a monetary angle to it. But a lot of money is usually concentrated at one place, especially in a sector like healthcare, right? So a few people have a lot of money. So I just wanted to understand from your perspective that once you started evaluating the healthcare ecosystem in general, where and how do you see the different opportunities which are coming into this ecosystem, given the fact that 80 to 90% of the money is usually concentrated at one place? So just wanted that facet from you once.
No, absolutely. I think you make a very valid point. The majority of the money actually is in the healthcare service providers or hospitals, as we call them, right? Because in India in general, a large part of healthcare is out of pocket, which means the patient walks into the hospital, gets admitted or goes for a consultation, pays the money. And hence, the hospital ends up being the pool of capital or revenue for that matter. But what has changed in the past couple of years, I think, and then we've seen this journey in the West as well. It's an era of new digital health companies which started in India, I would say at least 4-5 years back. And COVID obviously acted as a catalyst. And now we see more and more opportunities of democratizing healthcare, as I want to call it, right? So we are trying to bring care closer to the patient's house in a mobile app. That's what has happened in the last couple of years to change that. You know, change that transition of money being at one place versus all these several players that have come out in the digital health space. And, you know, it will continue, a majority of the chunk will continue to lie with the hospitals. The reason being inpatient surgery costs are obviously much higher than your traditional OPDs or consults or diagnostics and so on and so forth. So I think the pool of money will continue to lie there, but from an opportunity standpoint, as an investor where I sit, I probably speak to, you know, 60, 70 digital health companies a month. So I think there are several niches or subspaces that have come up, which throw tremendous opportunity. You know, just to give you a few examples, probably, you know, 5-6 years back, telemedicine and e-pharmacy were like the initial wave of digital health that started. COVID, in fact, had huge tailwinds. And now we have seen several spaces booming up. I mean, it could be diabetes, mental health, skincare, hair care, so on and so forth. So there are several niches that have come out. And that creates opportunities for, obviously, founders and also investors to deploy capital in these assets.
So very interesting point. I'll probably dwell a little bit deeper into it in the later part of the podcast. Let's talk a little bit about W Health Ventures. Let's talk a little bit about their philosophy. What is it that you people are focusing on? I see that you people already have made around 4 to 5 different investments in companies like Vysar, Ice Health, Beat Zero, and Good Health Company. So just wanted to understand the investment philosophy. What are you people focusing on, and what is the basic thesis of W Health Ventures?
Absolutely. So as I was mentioning in the earlier part of our conversation, Sohail, you know, the healthcare journey across India and to an extent even in the US is broken. And, you know, we've been talking about access, affordability, quality of healthcare for the longest time now. And only tech can change some of these things, right? And then the consumer behavior, tech adoption, both these things have changed in the last couple of years. And hence, India becomes a ripe opportunity to invest in healthcare assets. Now talking about our thesis areas, so, you know, the mental model that I use at the fund and, you know, all of my colleagues use, so we break down into 3 thesis or focus areas. So first is essentially companies that are going after a specific therapeutic or a disease area and going, you know, deep into it. So this is called, you know, verticalization of care. This would include spaces like diabetes, where we have invested in Beto, mental health, where we have invested in Vysa, cancer care, where we have invested in Jasper, this is in the US, and so on and so forth. So going deep, capturing the entire lifetime value for the patient in that particular space and catering to the entire journey. Because as a patient, you don't want to go to one place for one need and another place for another need. If you become a digital player and solve everything across their value chain, I think it becomes easier for the patient as well as for you as a company or a venture. You know, you capture the entire lifetime value. So that's the first type of company that we invest in. Second type really is around D2C brands, which are building something at the cusp of health and wellness. And they will always end up being product and service solutions. So product first, but service solutions as well. So here we have Milo, which is a pregnancy care app, trying to build consumer products, but also providing healthcare packages for women in their pregnancy journey. This could be postpartum weight loss, postpartum depression, healthy baby, and so on and so forth. And again, in this category, I would put Good Health Company, which is a sexual health company. Again, a doctor consultation is a part of it. So that's the second category. And the third part of our thesis broadly is enabler ecosystem, which includes lending, health insurance, AI, SaaS. So those are, you know, 4 sort of spaces within the enabler ecosystem that we look at W Health Ventures. Over and above venture investing, Sohail, what we also have, which we have started recently in India, is called a venture studio. Essentially, you know, what we have realized over 2 years of investing at W Health, that people are not innovating. Founders are still going behind the same problem statements of EMR, EHR, e-consultation, telepharmacy, e-pharmacy, teleconsultation, and so on and so forth. So how can we create innovation? How can we bring newer clinical models from the West, contextualized to India, and create ventures out of it? So that's the second part of the business that we do in India. We incubate companies from scratch along with founders, along thesis areas where there are white spaces, which we haven't seen in India so far. Because healthcare is complex to build, right? And founders are not chasing those opportunities because it's complex. They are not certain. So can we be that catalyst of change is really the thought process at the fund that we have to do.
Interesting. So Namit, I'll just double click on a few of the facets here. So one is, of course, You're very rightly pointed out that I think, you know, the whole ecosystem in itself has kind of grown. And what the kind of companies or the kind of startups that we used to see back in 2014, 2015, that market itself has kind of moved on now. And, you know, a lot of those solutions have now become either commoditized or just a feature now, instead of that being a proper full-fledged business in itself. Right. Would probably want to understand a little bit about the evolution that you have seen in the healthcare ecosystem from an investor's perspective, because the investments usually happen in waves, right? So the current trend which is there, where the majority of the opportunity lies, that is where an investor would want to put in money or back the right horses, so that one of them would become big, you know, huge in the coming time. So just probably right from the time of probably, because I think 2012, 2013 was the age where a few of the companies started off, then came the whole delivery, the pharmacy era, right? And now we have kind of moved into the digital health domain as well. So there have been a lot of, and there is usually a timing mismatch as well, many a times that there are some startups which basically, so just wanted to understand a little bit about the progression that you have seen in the healthcare ecosystem in general. What are the kind of waves that you have seen which have come, and what is it in the next 2 or 3 years which you see as the bigger trends in the healthcare space in general? Whoever is building as a startup founder right now should focus on those in case they want to make a venture-backed business.
Absolutely. So very, very valid. I mean, as you rightly said, there are waves that happen in ecosystem. And if I were to start from, let's say, 2013-14 era, where we spoke about the pharmacy and the teleconsultation models, I think they came and they were largely horizontal play. When I say horizontal, I mean, they're not focusing on a specific disease area. But what they're trying to do is capture the lifetime value of the customer by solving everything that they want across several therapeutic areas, across several products. And the hypothesis there was that for a certain CAC, you will capture a large LTV, and hence the economics will stack up. And then it ended up becoming a distribution play, because these are at-home deliveries, and, you know, at-home deliveries of medicines, I mean, at-home virtual consultation and stuff like that. That was the first era. I think more recently, during just about the COVID era, I would say 2019, 2020 onwards, we have seen a lot of vertical plays where companies are focusing deep into spaces. And, you know, the easiest spaces to solve for is chronic diseases. And then when I say chronic, it's a large TAM in the investor language. The number of people suffering from chronic diseases in India is, you know, probably 40% of the country today. Only diabetes is what, 270 million diabetics, 200 million pre-diabetics in India. And, you know, other chronic diseases being cardiometabolic issues, obesity, and so on and so forth. Right. So companies started to build in spaces which were obvious, diabetes being the clear choice for probably 30 odd companies in India today. Mental health, again, COVID was a large catalyst for people to come out. It's been a taboo for the longest time. And we've probably seen 15, 20 odd companies building in the mental health space in India now. It could be a therapy or a psychiatrist or a counselor-led model, or an AI company like what Paisa has done, which is our portfolio company, and so on and so forth. I think this was the second wave. And now, the next couple of years, at least, what keep us at W Health excited or motivated is to find out spaces where we haven't seen innovation. And you know, I'll give you a couple of examples that at Studio we have been recently working at. And this is a large part of, you know, what we have seen in the US healthcare is going to play out in India, obviously, after the contextualization. And that's what has happened in the past as well, right? People have adopted models which have worked in other geographies. For instance, in India, we haven't seen something known as pain management as a space, right? It just doesn't exist as a specialty or a super specialty. There is a doctor known as a pain doctor. There are only 2,500 odd pain doctors in India for a population of, 1.4 billion. So I think that's one niche that we've found out, and the team is working to create something in that space. So similarly, you know, the next couple of years, two or three things that will change according to us. One is going into niche areas or spaces which actually don't exist and identify the right white space and then create companies around it. I think the second important thing that will shape up healthcare is just unlocking the Bharat story and creating new go-to-market strategies. And then the reason I say that is because healthcare as a business is a trust-based business because the person relies on you with their life and death. So it is not possible to deliver purely on the basis of an app when you are an unknown brand, right? They want to see you. They want to know who you are, what is the ethos behind what you're solving for, and so on and so forth. So I think more and more healthcare businesses which are digital right now will start to become omni-channel, which is also what we have seen in the D2C space. And, in both D2C and fintech, what we saw in 2013-14 when they started, healthcare is now at that point. And now most of those D2C businesses have now pivoted into, or not pivoted, have added offline as a channel as they speak. Similarly, in healthcare, I think this unlocking of new GTM strategies is going to happen, which means people will start to create either small shop-in-shop, clinics, single specialty chains. So that is the second important trend that I foresee happening. So businesses will become tech-enabled and not just digital.
Very interesting. Very interesting. So I basically, one of the very interesting pointers which you touched upon was the whole digital, tech not being as a service, but tech becoming an enabler. So I wanted to understand a little bit about the, when you are evaluating any startup, mass versus niche, how do you evaluate these two different kind of businesses when it comes to health? Because there might be a lot of companies or startups which are focusing on a super niche, which probably issues or diseases which might be very critical, but the volume might not be that big. So how do you evaluate these kind of startups?
So I think, again, you bring an interesting point. TAM, for a country the size of India, TAM for everything is large, right? TAM for this jacket is large, TAM for this chair is large. So, because of the sheer population, But as you rightly said, there could be problem points or pain points for patients which are niche and critical, but might not have a large number of people suffering from it. And I think for those businesses, my advice to those founders typically is that, this is not a venture backable business. You're better off bootstrapping it, you're better off doing friends and family and make like a small profitable business. Because if the TAM doesn't exist, you have to understand, right? VCs or any investors for that matter need to have a certain financial fiduciary responsibility towards our LPs. So if something will grow from only X to 3X or 2X, then it does not justify the risk that I'm sitting on. So it has to be like an X to 100X, and most VCs will talk about it, right? That it has to be a exponential growth and not a linear growth. So if you are sitting on a linear growth, or if you foresee that, I think it's you are better off not raising capital from an investor because it will not serve the purpose. And when we evaluate, just to give you a small example, I was briefly talking about pain. If I ask you a question, do you know anyone in your friend's family who is suffering from chronic pain? You'll probably know 2-3 people, or your friend will know someone who is suffering from it. So those are like softer aspects that you kind of, over the years, you understand, same holds true for diabetes, same holds true for mental health. Someone in our family definitely would have diabetes or pre-diabetes. Most of us face mental health issues. So some of these problems are fairly common for us to understand that the TAM is large. And obviously, it's at the end of the day, for some of us, it might end up becoming an Excel exercise. Calculating TAM is not a rocket science. So we'll do some population, take some adoption cut, take some prevalence cut, and then arrive at TAM, serviceable addressable market, serviceable obtainable market. I mean, it's good for a deck. But founders, when they are building, as I said, would know what they are solving for, whether this is large enough for them to solve for. If it is not large enough, then I'm not saying don't build in those spaces. Please do. But it's just that you have to understand your financial journey from there.
So how do you, I mean, you have been an investor and a lot of people here don't understand the investor's perspective, right? So I basically want to understand, you know, in general, one, of course, from you as an individual who's focusing on healthcare and in general for an investor, what is the usual process of evaluating any startup? And there are a lot of companies which might be doing a lot of business, but might not be venture backable. Right. So how do you basically, you know, differentiate between these two? So is it the speed of growth and or is it something else?
No, I think a couple of data points here, Sohail, and any investor would actually look at that. So maybe I'll break this answer into two parts. One, what any investor would look at. And second, what I as a healthcare investor additionally want to look at. Right. So your revenue, which is your month-on-month growth, CAC, LTV, I think gross margins, path to profitability, unit economics, product market fit are like 6-7 standard metrics that any founder should also think about. Not just that VCs look at it, but when you're building something, you would actually want to think about these things very, very strongly, because then only you are creating value to yourself and to the society by building something large. Right. But when it comes to healthcare, I think a couple of other things which matter a lot to us is what is your patient feedback? During our diligence, we end up talking to probably 50-100 odd patients who are using your solution, service, product to understand how they are thinking about it, how it changed their life. So this basically helps us understand what is the NPS of the company, even though the company will be capturing something. But patient feedback is very important. The second important metric again is retention for your customers. How many repeat? What is the repeat usage that is happening on the platform? Because only if customers love you, your gross margins will be higher because you'll be able to charge a lot, right? I mean, that's the way to think about it. Many people will not think about gross margins like that. By the way, they would just do revenue minus COGS, give gross margin. But it is a factor of how much love you have in the system for you to charge X so that you can make a Y% margin, right? And then a third important metric that we look at as an investment firm is just the clinical outcomes. Because if you're not building something which is changing the clinical outcomes of a patient or life of a patient exponentially, then I think there is no value addition. So for us, as you mentioned in the beginning, right, changing the life of 100 million people is like our personal, as a fund vision statement. So just to give you a small example, if you're building something in the diabetes space, the HbA1c reduction should show in your data, and which is what is happening in case of our portfolio Beto. They are able to make that change. So I think clinical outcomes is again very, very critical from an investor standpoint, or at least from my standpoint. So then, so these are standard metrics, and then these are some special metrics which I put into my special category, special bucket. Wo stack nahi ho raha toh will probably not invest.
I have one more question, and then we'll probably open it up for the audience. So guys, anybody who wants to ask a question directly to Namit, please raise your hands from the button in the Zoom, and I'll pull you in for that question. And till that time, I'll just ask my question here. So Namit, I basically, you know, wanted to understand a little bit about the day-to-day functioning of an investor. Okay, so this is purely a very, very generic question, and you can basically be as frank and honest as possible, because a lot of people don't know how an investor operates. They just believe that a deck comes and investor sees, and then they have a lot of money in their bank, and they basically put the money in your bank account. But what is the day-to-day of an investor look like? And in general, if you're a part of a firm, what are the different divisions, domains, and is it like a company or is it like a group of people who are working? How does that thing work? Completely from a layman's perspective.
I think the second part was easier to answer. It's like any other company. It's just that most VC firms are small because you don't need that many people to do what we do. So on the investing side of things, we also have a 5-member team. So I mean, it's not like a large org, but, you know, between five of us, we manage all the deals.
Oh, interesting.
Coming to the first part you mentioned, right? What does day of an investor look like? Doesn't look very pleasant, by the way. People might think, ki haan, matlab bank account mein paisa, and I'll just, you know, I'll just put a check and fund the company. That's not how, I wish life was that simple. It is unfortunately not. But having said that, jokes apart, for any investor, at least personally for me, what keeps us motivated is to talk to founders, right? That's where the real beauty of the job comes into picture. And hence a large part of a day-to-day, in fact, is about talking to the founders. So if I were to break it down for you, 35-40% time goes in new deal evaluation, which means, talking to founders and understanding their business models. It could be a first call, follow-on call, so on and so forth. Another 30-40% goes into your portfolio management. So we tend to work quite closely with our portfolio companies, and that's the real value add that as an investor you could do to your founder. This could be across several initiatives. This could be across hiring. This could be across some help or support in digital marketing, how to improve processes, looking at MISs, and so on and so forth, right? So there are several functions. It could be finance, marketing, hiring, branding, depending on me or my teammates, areas of strength. So that's the second major chunk of the day. And I think the remaining time, in fact, goes about seeing what is happening in other ecosystems. It could be non-healthcare ecosystems. It could be healthcare ecosystems in other countries. Because at the end of the day, someone is paying me to be ahead of the curve. My LP is relying on me so that I can be ahead of the curve, find out the right trend, and then make an investment. So, in order for you or in order for a VC to do that, understanding those things becomes very, very critical. I think those are the large chunks of day. And then there's a lot of firefighting that happens, and which is true for any other early stage company. We're also an early stage company in that sense, right? So something or the other will keep crashing, and then you have to solve for it.
So what is the volume of deals that we usually foresee in a VC firm? It's not hundreds and thousands a year. The numbers are usually very, very low, is what I understand, right?
Actually, that's not the case, because for us, given that we are a sector focused fund, I think our deal volume happens to be 70-80 deals a month.
Wow.
So that's close to 1,000 a year, right? But for funds which are, in fact, investing across spaces, for them, it's, you can just multiply that by 4-5 times if they are investing in 4-5 areas. So just to give you a metric, right, and it will help you understand the quantum I'm talking about. Since 2015, 8,000 healthcare companies have started in.
Yeah.
So that's the volume, and which is amazing. That's what keeps you charged up to talk to new founders, see what they are building, understand. And that's the beauty of the profession, I must say. A very senior VC from Fireside, Kamajit, says, founders are king, we are just king makers. And I, in fact, just believe that also. I mean, I'm sure most other VCs would believe that, but I'm like quite openly quoting it, because that is how it is. Founders are kings, we are just helping them, unlock scale.
Yeah. Valid point. Thanks a lot, Namit, for that. Anybody has a question for Namit? You can just, Vijit, you can unmute and you can ask your question.
Hi, Namit. Good to see your outlook. Interesting that you mentioned about nobody innovates much in this field. So I guess the problem size is so big. Lots of scope for everybody to innovate. I mean, even if you are doing something me too, you have lots of scope in innovating your processes and so much. About your investment, at how early stage do you invest? Pre-ideation, ideation, post numbers, at what stage do you invest? And the numbers you said, like you are investing about 1,000 deals a year, that's phenomenal. I mean, this is the first time I'm hearing somebody talking about.
No, we're not investing 1,000 deals a year.
Evaluating.
Okay. That's the beauty. I'm so sorry. I was wondering. Okay. So what sort of early stage do you... Sorry, Sohail, you were saying something.
No, Guru. I just wanted to clarify this, Namit, because even I got it wrong. So you, how many do you usually end up investing in a yearly basis?
So Sohail, you know, I don't have a target that I will do X percent, but on an ideal or our current, you know, current traction basis, I would say it's closer to 0.9% of all the deals.
So out of 1,000, we have done 9. I get your point. Got it. Mm-hmm. So that's the number that we're chasing. Interesting. Okay, Abhijit, you please continue with your question.
So it's about 7-8 deals a year, month on an average, right?
No, one less than one deal a month.
Deals. I think that's the wrong way to look at it, right? I mean, it's not a monthly business. It's not like I'm selling something.
I mean, just deals,
right? If there is a deal that I like, and if there are two deals that I like which come in parallel and we are convinced, we'll do them both, right? It's not like I'm chasing.
Okay, you said 0.9. Yeah. Got your point. So now asking the question, at what level you guys normally entry, and like, do you also play a role in day-to-day running of the company? How, what sort of supports you bring in?
Sure. So we do anywhere between seed to series A checks. So, you know, ticket size, average ticket size being $3-3.5 million of first check. So that's the stage at which we do. And as far as playing a role, I think in the last question that Sohail was asking, I was in fact explaining some of the things that we help our founders with. Obviously, we won't help in day-to-day operations, but we are there as a partner for our founders.
No, at what stage do you come in? Like on an ideation stage, or like a MVP stage, or like you have some guidelines revenue for coming in? So revenue would, stage post.
I would say closer to you know, seed plus, wherein there is a certain MVP identified. You have some traction, and there's proof of concept which is out there, which is working for you.
That's your point. And what's your minimum ticket size?
I mean, it would be hard to say a minimum and a maximum, right? As I said, the average is closer to $3.5-4 million.
Get you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Abhijit, for that. A lot of questions. So one thing which I wanted to just ask, which is an extrapolation of my previous question and what Abhijit was asking as well. So you had a small team. So do you have specialists in your team as well who can help them with these specific activities? So if somebody needs help in marketing, do you connect them with your network, or do you have somebody in the team who gets hands-on with the work?
So it works both ways, Sohail. I think the way team is built out, the one important parameter that we have is all of us are in some shape or form been in the healthcare space. For me, it's consulting and investing. For my partner, it's he was an healthcare operator and then turned an investor, and so on and so forth. So most of us, or in fact, all of us have been in the healthcare space, which gives you a certain edge when it comes to helping our portfolio companies. Coming to your second question, over a period of time, we have developed some sort of inherent strength, areas of strength where we can help our companies with. And if we can't ourselves, then the endeavor is to find help from the ecosystem. You know, for instance, if one of our founders want to understand how to shoot podcasts, then I will reach out to Sohail and ask, if we are creating a community or a content-led layer somewhere, then I'll reach out to you. I'm assuming and hoping that you will help them.
Of course.
So that's the role that we try and play. More strategic, not day-to-day. But if we, the endeavor is to always find the right people who could help the company.
Namit, the first question is on the point you mentioned about low trust on the Indian society as a general, we know, right? So when you talk about companies which are focusing on a chronic vertical, let's say oncology, nephrology, how do you ensure that digital plays get successful and get this right sustainable traction? In the sense that, if I have something, something related to oncology, I would straight away go to the best doctor, best hospital. I would want the doctor to touch me, in the sense that I'm just talking about a case, let's say, where cancer incidences are more at the older age. We are also seeing younger age guys also getting that. But when you look at the mentality of an older age person or anyone for that matter, even probably if I would also want to go to a doctor, right, physically. So how these specialized startups would overcome this? One is obviously having a physical presence, which you talked about in the trend. But how do you foresee this trend, foresee this in the future?
I think you alluded to it in the second part, right? Because trust takes years to build out. And for something like oncology, people would actually want to, and it is a problem statement that in fact cannot be solved digitally. You have to understand fundamentally, I mean, what can you do digitally? It's not like diabetes where you can, you know, a health coach can call you and help you maneuver the journey. For your actual oncology treatment, a physical presence is required, but for post-surgery, post-chemo, your mental health help, your nutrition, coaching, dieting, all that can happen virtually. So it has to be an omni-channel play. I mean, that's how you will be able to solve for it.
Got it. So we try to capture...
Just to add to that, over a period of time, any company is solving in that space would end up, I mean, you have to create the right type of medical content for people to rely on you. You have to understand what the patient is looking for and then create content around it for them to trust you. Those are the only two things that I can at this point think about.
Mm-hmm. So the patient journey has to be probably captured post the physical treatment, let's say a medical surgery or a chemo or whatever. But post that, you would require a diagnostic test or a medicine, anything. So that part of the journey can be captured.
No, it could be both. It could be both, right? I mean, not just you have to capture the post-discharge surgery, even the pre-treatment surgery can also be captured. And if you prefer in this space, you can look at this company called Jasper Health. It's one of our oncology investments in the US, which is trying to do both pre and post journeys for the patient.
Got it. And my second question is that how, as a VC, how do you guys do the due diligence of the healthcare aspect of the things clinically? How do you approach that? Financial is fine, legal is fine. How do you approach the health side of things?
So very interesting question, Shriram. So essentially, as I said, the team is in some shape or form healthcare in that aspect. And we also have a couple of venture partners and an advisory board who are actually doctors. So if we were to, let's say, look at a company which is solving in the diabetes space, it's easier to understand, you know, the HbA1c reduction that they would have proven or they would have shown. So getting data, talking to doctors, looking at the clinical protocols that these companies have created, we understand whether they are creating something meaningful or just, namesake performance on the clinical side. So that's the only way. You know, you talk to the doctors inside that startup, you bring our doctors onto the table, and that's how we understand whether what is being built out is making sense on.
Got it. I think my last question, I'm sorry, I'm asking a few of them.
Last question.
On the exit side of things, right? So how exit looks for digital health companies in India for a VC going to a PE? How is that happening? Is there any happen till now or?
So I think it would be, as I was mentioning in the earlier part of the conversation, Shriram, I think digital health in India is at a very nascent stage. To be honest with you, exits are at least 5 to 7 years away when it comes to digital health. We haven't seen any exits to date. Obviously, some of the e-pharmacy players have done secondaries and stuff like that. But like an eventual exit, if you want to say IPO, etc., that's some time away, I would say.
Yeah, thank you, Nandan. Thank you, Sohail.
Thanks a lot, Shriram. Okay, so we have Karthik. Karthik?
Thanks, Sohail. Hi, Namit. Thank you so much for the insightful talk. I had a couple of questions for you. The first was around, what are your thoughts on like some of the upcoming government products around like the Universal Health ID and the India Health Stack coming up? How do you see this impacting like the healthcare industry, especially in India in general? And then the second question was more around like, can you elaborate a little more on like your process about researching a particular industry or like sub industry for that matter? Like, how do you go about, especially for like someone who's looking to build in this space?
No, both wonderful questions, Karthik. I'll take the first one, which is around the Ayushman Bharat Digital Mission, ABDM tech stack that has been built out. I think at least personally, I'm very excited about the fact that, you know, this infrastructure is now laid out, which will help hospitals, pharmacists, patients all to create their own individual IDs, registry ID or a patient ID, and then integrate it, which will give you a longitudinal view of a patient's data once it is implemented. Right. So what we now, I think in the next, hopefully in the next year or two, there should be adoption. Again, given that this is a public good, the government has to intervene and push its adoption, right? Just having it on the COVID app will not really solve too much. So I think some of those initiatives are now happening based on our conversations also. But yeah, it will fundamentally change the data layer of healthcare in India, which at least till now did not exist. And we've seen startups building in that space. So I'm super excited about ABDM and to see its impact on the future of healthcare delivery. Could you repeat your second question again?
Yeah, it was more around like, how do you go about researching a particular industry or like sub industry, especially for like someone who's planning to build in this space? Like, what would be your advice?
So Karthik, if you're building something in this space, one or two things, as I said, apart from just understanding whether the problem exists or not, how large is the problem? And then beyond that, some of the softer aspects in your research should include talking to both patients and doctors. So stakeholders are patients, doctors, hospitals. So do talk to several of these people before even thinking about what you want to do, whether it's a real problem or no, whether the status quo solution exists. If you're trying to build something which is not incrementally or exponentially better than what the status quo is, there's no point building it out, right? There's no innovation in copying something. So I think it has to be different from what exists in the market out there. So those are the two things I would suggest. And then obviously see what has happened in the other markets in those disease areas. What's the kind of clinical innovation or a business model innovation that has happened and how you could see if that is doable in India. And then fundamentally different aspects being US is a largely payer-driven market while India is an out-of-pocket-driven market. So keep those softer aspects of Indian healthcare in your mind when you are researching. And yeah, happy to chat async as well to help you more.
Thank you so much, Namit.
No, all the best for what you're building.
Thanks a lot, Karthik, for that. Anybody has another question? We can take probably one more. I have some, so I will. Otherwise, I'll go. Anybody else who wants to ask? I think we've taken four. Namit.
Yes, sir.
I basically wanted to understand a little bit. You know, I think we're towards the end of the podcast. So just a few generic but questions which we ask every founder who usually comes in. The whole Bharat story, which is coming up right now, and you know, it's everybody has been talking about the Bharat story for a very long time. But I think the needle in terms of the monetization. Everybody has been talking about the Bharat story for a very long time. Of course, there's a lot of potential in terms of the volume. But many a time, you know, we don't see the companies making a lot of revenue or profits because the ARPU is usually very, very low, right? So just wanted to get your perspective on the healthcare aspect, because of course, there is a lot of issues in terms of diseases and stuff which is out there in the tier 2, tier 3, tier 4. But in terms of the money that can be made in from that patient ecosystem or that strata of the segment of the consumer segment, what are your thoughts on that? And are there any interesting businesses that you have seen which are really killing it, not just in terms of scale, but in terms of the business model as well in the tier 3, tier 4 market?
I think very interesting question, Sohail. In our portfolio also, you know, for our diabetes company, we've seen 60%, 65% people coming from tier 2 and beyond. So I think the what we are trying to do from our portfolio companies is bring healthcare closer to them, because people don't understand what is an endocrinologist. They don't know what is diabetes. They are first time users of the services that this company is providing. So as far as volume of patients is concerned, I think there's a large volume sitting there. On the ARPU side, I think it's very counterintuitive when we assume that people don't have the propensity or ability to pay. It's actually false. We have seen on the contrary, for one of the companies in obesity management space that we have recently incubated, we have our first offline clinic in Aurangabad, where people are spending as high as 12,000 for a 3-month subscription, which is, you know, kind of counterintuitive that for obesity, people would want to spend that much in a town like Aurangabad. So I think it's slightly, it depends on the service solution that you're building. Sometimes we tend to assume that tier 2, tier 3 will not have the ability to pay, but that's not the case. Even in case of the pregnancy company that we've invested in, Milo, it's a product plus service company, as I initially mentioned, right? Even there, similar trend, 60-65% people from tier 2, tier 3. The AOV tends to be very similar to what it is in metros. So wow. I think it is sometimes we get, I would say, echoed by listening that, you know, wahan ka customer paisa nahi pay karega, unit economics stack up nahi karega. That's not true. I think it's about creating the right solution and people will pay for it. And this is, I'm talking about, you know, the middle India. I'm not talking about your bottom of the pyramid yet. That is a very different game where healthcare is a public good and then the government intervention starts to kick in. I'm talking about the middle layer, you know, middle class and above, the 400, 450 million people in the center, I would say. I think AOV, TAM both exist there.
At least that's a very interesting insight. बिकॉज मुझे वही लगता है कि यार आई थिंक सही आईसीपी अगर आपका हो ना आई थिंक यू कैन मेक मनी इन द टियर 3 टियर 4 मार्केट इट्स अ मिसनोमर
इट्स अ देयर इज अ वेरी इंटरेस्टिंग बुक व्हिच आई एम येट टू रीड द मिडिल इंडिया और द मिडिल इनकम इंडिया इफ आई एम नॉट रॉन्ग बाय बाला फ्रॉम आर्कम वेंचर्स सो आई थिंक डेफिनेटली वर्थ अ ग्रैब वेरी सून इट्स ऑन माय टू रीड लिस्ट एज वेल So when he's talking about how this market is monetizable, why is this monetizable? What is it?
Padni padegi. Thank you for giving me another book to read. So I have a habit of picking up like 7-8 books at one go. Wonderful. Very voracious reader. So that's one book, another book in my book list. Before we go, one last question which we ask every guest of ours. 3 things which you think a founder should do. And 3 things which you think he should not do for him to be a successful founder. Not a venture backable founder, but a successful founder.
As success is, you know, hard to define to everyone, to each his own, right? But let me give you my 2 cents for founders, what they should do. I think the first thing which is very critical is be close to your patient / customer, hear their voice, get your insights, right? Unless you know what they are thinking about you, you will not be successful. So as a brand, as a service provider, as a trust creator, you have to listen to your patient. And this is true for most businesses, right? In D2C, in fintech, you have to listen to them. That's number one. Number two, I think about your business on fundamentals. You have to think about margins and path to profitability from day one, irrespective of funding winter, funding summer, or whatever season of funding it could be. Because you are building something, you are burning money, either yours or someone else's, right? So it's better to think about it very, very early on, even when you are doing a paper plan. So when we speak to founders at, you know, seed, pre-seed stage also, we appreciate if they have like a 1-year, 2-year plan in place that this is how things will pan out. I could go wrong in these 2-3 areas and this would be the levers of my burn, but I have thought about it, right? So that is important. I think third, third important thing that would make a founder successful, just be unapologetically yourself, Yash. That is what it is. At the end of the day, you are building something. An investor A or an investor B might not like you, but that doesn't change life for you. You know, you will get success when if you're building something great. It's not necessary that, you know, Namit has to like them or Sohail has to like them or someone else has to like them. Just have conviction in what you're building. And if you're going on the right trajectory, I'm sure you will succeed at someday.
Makes sense.
So I think I've answered what they should do. Now, what they shouldn't do. Shouldn't do is actually easier, Yash. Don't do financial frauds. Don't do any sort of frauds. right? And I think, don't let your credibility go away as a founder or as an ecosystem player. It's just bad to badmouth other founders or other individuals or other VCs for that matter. I mean, to each his own. So if you're doing something, just focus on that. Don't get distracted. If you don't get distracted is basically the summary.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Cool. I think with that, we can draw this podcast to a close. Avijit was asking about incubation. You people also do incubation, right?
So at the studio, yes.
So I think that details also, Avijit, you can find on the website. And you can probably reach out as soon when required. So how was your experience, Namit?
It's wonderful, Sohail. I think very, very interesting questions that you asked, some of the people asked. It's just refreshing to speak about healthcare at this length. And what I would request you is people in the community who are in the healthcare space, the audience at least, because a couple of them wanted to know more, please feel free to pass my email address. It's also on our website and on my LinkedIn. Directly as well. But if someone reaches out to you to get connected, I'm happy to chat async as well. And look forward to meet you in some of these mixers very soon.
I will. This time around, Savi, I'll take the coordinates from Savi. And we would definitely catch up. And I would love to have you in our mixers. Catch up over probably a beer or probably coffee, whichever is convenient for you.
On both.
Chalo, take care, Namit. With that, guys, we will draw this podcast to a close. Thanks a lot, Namit, for doing this, taking time out and spreading some awesome, awesome light on the healthcare ecosystem in general. Because I think there were a lot of pointers that we talked about and we actually went in depth and all different directions possible, at least for people to understand how the health tech ecosystem is operating, as well as what are the different opportunities that you people should build in. And hopefully this podcast was of use to you guys. And thanks a lot, guys, for joining in, for all the people who took time out on a Friday night to listen in, to Namit and the Startup Founders Podcast at the Builders Club. You people are our champions. You people have been championing us for so long. Please share, in case we will be, releasing an edited version of this on YouTube as well as on Spotify. In case you people don't follow us on YouTube, please do so. You can just type in the Builders Club and you'll find us there. And with that, we will draw this podcast to a close. Thanks a lot, everyone, for taking time out. This is Fractious signing off. Upwards and onwards.
Thanks, Sohail. Have a great weekend. Thanks.
Bye. Everyone. Take care. Bye. Bye, guys. That was the episode. Hope you got some rich insights for your idea from this. If you like the episode, do share it with your friends and rate us on Spotify, Google Store, and iTunes. If you want to join the Water Cooler Podcast live, join the club at www.thebuildersclub.me. Until next time, upwards and onwards.